Blog Talk Radio.
You're the light, you're the night, you're the color of my blood. You're the cure, you're the pain, you're the only thing I want to touch.
Welcome to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Join us as we bring weekly cultural topics right here to our studio. You, as our studio audience, are welcome to chime in and call the studio or join us on chat. Because, you know, at Cultural Conversations, we believe that cultural issues really do shape and impact our world. So, join us as we discuss the hottest topics and the cultural issues of our day. Stay tuned. Welcome to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Join us as we bring weekly cultural topics right here to our studio. You, as our studio audience, are welcome to chime in and call the studio or join us on chat. Because, you know, at Cultural Conversations, we believe that cultural issues really do shape and impact our world. So, join us as we discuss the hottest topics and the cultural issues of our day. Stay tuned. Well, welcome to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. I want to thank all of my listening audience out there who have joined us throughout the summer months here, and we bring the hottest topics to you, and we want to hear from you. I know I see you in the chat room, and I hear you and see you on social media. And I just want to give you a big thank you to all my listening audience out there for listening to Cultural Conversations. Tonight's Cultural Conversation, we're going to center on two current event topics. These are hot current event topics that are in the news media and all over social media, of course, today. And we have one, Mr. Bill Cosby. You know Bill Cosby as the Cosby Show, the Huxtable, Dr. Huxtable, the one and only premier or ideal icon of a father, whether that be a black father or a white father or other. He was portrayed, Bill Cosby was portrayed on that show, and much too in his real life as this ideal figure. Well, now we see things are surfacing where there's rape accusations, and he has actually admitted to drugging women for sex to make them render them unconscious, and therefore so that he can have sex with these women. So we're going to talk about that tonight. We're also going to talk about the case of Sandra Bland, and you've seen much on the news where she was legally arrested or detained, and then at the end or the outcome being she supposedly committed suicide in her cell in Texas. And so we're going to talk about that case as well. But the kind of the topic or the center point for tonight's discussion is violence against African American women. And when I say violence against African American black women, I mean the violence that we endure, the violence that we portray ourselves. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to also look at some resources that are out there to assist and help, not only assist us in our own domestic struggles and things that we struggle with in a violent nature, but also to better prepare others and assist others in understanding us and our needs and the things that we need to function in this world together. We have as our very, very special guest, Tanya Lovelace Davis. Tanya Lovelace Davis is Chief Executive Officer at Women of Color Network, and I'm excited to have her in our online studio here at Cultural Conversations tonight. Just a little bit about Women of Color Network, and I'm going to let her tell you the whole span about what they do, is that the Women of Color Network, they advocate to eliminate domestic violence and sexual assault. They especially focus on kind of the broad range of violence affecting communities of color and other forms of oppression that intersect with violence against women of color. And so she's going to come on the show in just a minute to give her perspective about these two issues that we're seeing facing us today. If you would like to call in the show now, since I got the online studio up and it seems to be functioning a little better than it was before, you can call in the show at 347-857-3121, and we'll be happy to open our phone line after we kind of set the tone here for tonight's discussion. Again, you're listening to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Let me see if I can get Tanya on the phone at this time, and we're going to start with our interview session here at Cultural Conversations. Thank you for listening. We appreciate the listening audience and your participation in our discussion. Tanya, are you on the line?
I am. Can you hear me, Verona?
Yes, I can hear you. I'm going to say that's a blessing, and I'm going to say technology. That's all I have to say.
Yes.
But I am so excited to have you. I have given our listening audience just a preview about who you are and the magnitude of the work that you're doing at Women of Color Network. But I would like you to kind of give our listening audience a brief introduction about yourself and then something about that organization that's doing some dynamic work here.
Oh, thank you so much, Verona. I think you and I have known each other and been colleagues in various ways for a few years now, and so it's really exciting to be able to be on. I think you're doing amazing work, and I love your show, and I'm just so excited and feeling very grateful to have this opportunity. Tanya Lovelace Davis, I have been an advocate in the field of domestic and sexual violence since 1995, so this is my 20th year anniversary. I started off doing local advocacy, doing local training, and really working directly with domestic and sexual violence survivors and their families, and really became a part of the Women of Color Network in 2011, going through their first leadership training, where they reached out to women of color on a local level to really pull them into their leadership loop. And I had a great opportunity to meet many women around the country, became then a staff of Women of Color Network in 2002, and in 2004, I became the manager for WOCN and worked in that capacity, moved into the director role for WOCN and then the senior director role for WOCN, and then we spun off as of September 30th, 2014. And so Women of Color Network just, again, spun off from the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence and the Pennsylvania Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And so we are now an independent organization. And the work that we do is to really provide resources and support to women of color advocates and activists around the country. And really are in, I would say, well-positioned to really address and to create a platform for women of color voices around the country. We really amplify the leadership and voices of women of color because, as you mentioned, Verona, we really seek to link overall issues of oppression and violence across all of our communities of color. We really look to support women of Asian, African, Latin, Native, and Middle Eastern descent. And we look across a broad lens, a broad global context of colonialism and imperialism and all forms of isms such as capitalism and racism, sexism. And we really look at those intersections as they link up with violence against women of color. And so we are just really excited, again, to be able to share a platform tonight to help bring forth really as what we see as well being really key national issues that's really drawing all of our attention to mm-hmm. the experiences and the broad-based violence that women of color are experiencing.
Yeah, you know, and true, you know, it's something we need to start looking at on a national level because it impacts, you know, bless social media, you know, I understand and love media, TV media or radio media, but social media is one that gets the word out in a broad context. And I look at your organization as not only servicing the local right where you are, but bringing issues to bear. And when the whole Bill Cosby thing came about and he started pumping that up and saying, how do we define rape and what have you, it was like it was amazing to me. I said, are they insulting my intelligence? I don't care who raped. It is rape, you know. And they even said, yeah. Well, he was the hospital. He's very revered. Da-da-da. He just gave them drugs or the pills they wanted. And all of this kind of sidebar conversation to get off the whole concept as a violent act, it is rape regardless of who does it. What's your synopsis on that whole situation, Tanya?
Well, I just was really looking, trying to really recap and understand the timeline. I mean, this is, you know, these issues, these claims of sexual violence have been happening since November 2002, and I think even before that. And so it astonishes me. Truly, that this has not been looked at more deeply. The truth is that, you know, survivors' voices are not heard and are in particular often buried, especially when we are talking about people with high profiles, with people who have impacted people's lives, whether they be in television, movies, sports, they can even be in clergy, they can be in the police department, they can be in, you know, high-profile positions. So whether we're looking at sort of local impacts that individuals have had or on a national scale, what you typically find is this resistance, this disbelief that people have as if, you know, knowing someone, feeling as if you have a connection to this person, it's as if their actions can't somehow be out of line and be violent. And at the end of the day, as you said, you know, it's taken a long time for the term rape to come into this conversation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is very disheartening to me. It reminds me of the Ray Rice case where, you know, you finally get a video that somehow brings to bear the truth, so to speak. But, you know, for me as an advocate, I would have believed her voice from the beginning, right? It's It's where we come from as advocates. And, you know, to be humble and truthful, you know, not everyone comes from that perspective. And, you know, I spend a lot of time, we spend a lot of time, Verona, yourself and others, you know, spend a lot of time trying to get people to a place where they will hear survivors first. So not everyone comes from that perspective. You know, we had to wait until, you know, someone, you know, put him on blast on a Twitter, their Twitter page, and then you had to have a comedian to come out, you know, a white male comedian, or at least a comedian. So I probably shouldn't say that, but to have a comedian have to come out first and to then, you know, be able to make that assumption or make that statement and say, you know, he is a, you know, that this is a perpetrator, that it wasn't
right.
Until then that the case started to really be looked at seriously, and actually it was a man of color. So I apologize for that misstep. But it took a voice that wasn't the survivor voice to bring this to bear. And it's painful to me because what I'm recognizing is that there are many women who may not have had to be victims in this situation later on had there not been, or had there been some real intervention early in these situations. They were not heard. And so this is someone who got to continue to engage in his power and control, to use his pedestal. I mean, articles say that, you know, in his deposition, he said, you know, that he would ask specifically a modeling agent to connect him with young women who were new in town and who were not, quote unquote, financially doing well. I mean, these are, you know, sort of classic stances of someone who is looking for the most vulnerable individuals to be able to bring them into his space and to then, you know, have them, you know, to then drug them and, in his mind, you know, fair game to be able to engage in violence. You know, in my mind, it's, you know, violence, whether it is verbal violence or physical violence. And so, but in this case, he, you know, he stepped many lines, and it's just, it's problematic. And I just am hoping that people have enough of the evidence that they need to know now to believe it. But it's just so problematic that we didn't hear these women to begin with.
Yeah, you know, and it is problematic. And when I reflect on read the deposition, and he admitted that he secured the drugs in order to do these violent acts or to rape these women, and he still haven't admitted to actual rape. And so this whole controversy, the language, it seems that the legal system does not want to put a cap on it and say, yes, it is rape. But I think even in our day-to-day lives, and I'm talking about now ordinary, everyday women, when we go out on dates, a lot of people do not think that, well, I can go out on a date and I can be raped by someone that I know. I can be roughed up. I can be beat up or some type of violence perpetrated against me by someone that I agreed to go to a date or agreed to give some form of attention or time to. And I think that's where, even in our legal system, I see this kind of pulling back. Well, if these models or actresses knew Bill Cosby and they agreed to give him their time, then it must not be rape in the sense that we're looking at it. So, Tanya, in your work, tell us, actually define to any young woman, our listening audience listening out there, what actually is rape? Because I'm getting so many different definitions here because of the Bill Cosby case. I want my daughter to be 100% clear that if somebody take you, I'm serious. I'm like, if somebody take you and they take you and they put a drug in your system and you happen to display a behavior that you wouldn't display normally, and they knew that they put that drug in your system to cause that reaction. That, to me, is rape. So
absolutely.
I don't know. But there's such a thing as date rape. Could you explain to our listening audience what is that? What is date rape? What is date?
Well, you know, so first of all, you know, sexual violence, any type of unwanted verbal or physical sexual contact is violence. So, you know, threats around sexual violence, manipulation, coercion, demands for sex, coercive sex, use of a circumstance, you know, use of the relationship, use of power and control in the relationship. So whether this is someone that you've known for a day or whether this is someone that you've known for a decade, that, you know, really anything that is unwanted verbally or unwanted physically that has a sexual connotation is, you know, definitely in my mind and in my work and the way that we define it is really sexual violence. And, you know, but to get into sort of some of the weeds of what's, you know, being stated here, you know, this we really are talking about in the case of Bill Cosby, you know, is, you know, it sounds like that, you know, from really looking through many of the cases, which are just really, you know, difficult, you know, for many to see. But the truth is these are many women who are recounting having been given, you know, against their will, against their knowledge, you know, a drink with a drug in it. And so this is really someone who, under those circumstances, are not in a condition to consent, are not in a position to say yay or nay, not in a position to communicate willingly. So this is someone who is engaging in, really, in my mind, the most heinous forms of, you know, power, in that he's really taken, well, to me, you know, all sexual violence is done in that way. But in this particular case, this is someone who's used the influence of a drug to render someone unable to say yay or nay. And so he really not only took advantage, but engaged in sexual assault, sexual violence through the use of, through the use of drugs. And so, you know, in that point, there is no ability really to again provide consent. And, you know, whether it was, you know, and they there were some pretty graphic, you know, descriptions of, various forms of sexual contact that were engaged in, in which, you know, there were, you know, forced, you know, forcing their hands with his hands on his genitalia of him, forcing or using his hands and his body, you know, overall to cross over steps and bounds of a person. And at the end of the day, all of that is rape. So you can tell your daughters that under any circumstance that, you know, in which there would be some form of unwanted physical contact really without choice here is really a problem. And that is, you know, that is rape.
And the sad thing about that, and I think we also need, and when I say we, the audience and those in the community, we need to retrain our minds and re-educate ourselves that when women come and they make these, I don't want to say these accusations, but when they say, give their lived experiences, that we, in some ways, we need to acknowledge that, you know, and so often that a young girl, a woman, whoever will come and they will go to an authority figure, and that is played down. And how can we stop playing? We're still saying these women are lying. They just did it because they wanted to get ahead in their career. In some way, the culture of not accepting an ill or not accepting a violent act by someone we hold as icon, that's supposed to be the trend. And that trend must end. You know, I look at the whole Chris Brown incident with Rihanna. And who cares who Chris Brown is? He's a human. She's a human. He committed a violent act against her, and thus he must face the consequences regardless of who he is. Even in the case of the football player, Ray Rice, again, we hear, no, he didn't do it, or he, even when the tape came out, to try to hide or some way try to say, well, she's staying with him, so it must be okay. How can we change our attitude? Or what could we do in regards to that downplaying of this violent act?
Well, you know, I think first of all, you know, we have to take women's bodies and their voices seriously. And at this point, and when I say, you know, women, I'm looking about the, you know, the broad range of gender, because, you know, I'm also looking at the fact that, you know, there is a great deal, there's an uptick in sexual and domestic violence that is happening to trans women as well. And so the truth of the matter is that anybody who's considered to be vulnerable, considered to, and this, again, can also happen to men, as well. And so, you know, we do know that the greater numbers are impacting, you know, are impacting those who identify as women, those who identify as female. And so we know that that is a factor. And what we have to do is stop downplaying these voices. I think that as long as we have a culture that continues to champion power and masculinity, continues to champion celebrity and money, and who really then believe that that these women's bodies, that these individuals' bodies are not as important. You know, it's almost as treated as if it is a an inconvenience in the broader sense. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if, why would you bring this forward to interrupt somebody's you know, interrupt my entertainment or interrupt someone's, you know, vision of how they think of an individual. But at the end of the day, those, you know, whether you consider it to be an inconvenience or not, these are real, this is a real impact upon real people. Real violence is happening upon real bodies, and there just has to be greater value for those voices and for those bodies. And so we have a culture, as you really are speaking to, that that reinforces and maintains this this belief that these voices don't matter. But the truth is, you know, Black lives matter. You know, women's bodies matter. You know, all
right.
Survivor voices matter at the end of the day. And if you want to tell me that 32 women coming forward in the case of Bill Cosby is not enough, you know, I mean, and I understand that people are saying that, you know, what I kept seeing are people who were commenting and saying things like, here comes another one to jump on the bandwagon against Bill Cosby. But, you know, it's, I think that people have to step beyond that and have to be able to, you know, to really be willing to hear the voices. And be willing to embrace and make room for these truths. And so and I just think that we continue to not hear and continue to not acknowledge. And so society has to change. Our culture has to change. Men have to continue to challenge other men around masculinity and concepts of masculinity. You know, and men have to challenge each other and question each other on engaging in behavior that reinforces that women's voices should not be heard. And on a broader scale, we have to move away from underplaying the voices of those who are more vulnerable and are less likely to be heard, that all marginalized communities, really, their voices should be brought to the center. And not continue to be pushed aside. And so all of those things are very important. And I would love to see us, and you know, stand in solidarity and really being willing. To me, this is a teachable moment. And if we allow this teachable moment to just skate by without really having a dialogue about the importance of hearing survivors first, I think that it's a lost opportunity. And so, again, I think it's great that you're having this show, and great that others are really trying to bring this forward.
Yeah, I think it's a discussion that we need to have, and it's a discussion that we need to have even in our churches and our community organizations, mm-hmm. and to change the mindset. And I think what you said was so spot on and perfect, that men need to challenge other men on what really is masculinity and bring the whole concept of, you know, rape, violence against women, regardless of what color, black, white, or what nationality, what have you, but to bring the whole discussion to men. It's a conversation that must be had, and it must be had in our own intimate communities. Because when I think about those 30-something women, and for how many years have these women been holding on to this, have told somebody, and the voices just haven't been strong enough to outweigh Mr. Cosby's voice. And that is the tragedy of this whole situation.
And to join in that, I think that there is just still this mythology that, you know, that survivors like to lie about sexual assault. But the truth is that rape is the most underreported crime. I was really grateful to see that the National Sexual Violence Resource Center posted something today and really tried to reinforce that, you know, survivors are likely telling the truth because 63% of sexual assaults are not reported to the police. And so I think that in the very, very vast minority of cases, you will have a few folks who may or, you know, who if someone could define as not telling the truth. But the vast majority of people who are actually bringing this forward really are telling the truth. And we have to be willing to hear it. And it's not just male voices. It's really, I would have to say, I think that I was so surprised about reading so many of the comments, particularly around the Ray Rice case and the Chris Brown case where, well, and as well as the Bill Cosby case, where you heard so many women, you heard so many young people. There were so many voices that were really speaking out in favor of these individuals. And I just think that we would be in a better place, you know, if we were, you know, willing to really first, you know, be concerned about survivors, to make sure that they're getting the help and the support that they need, to really believe them, to really support them, and to really challenge ourselves to not stand behind or champion someone just because of their status or because, you know, there's someone that you can identify with or that you feel connected to, that we really have to be willing to hear and to make room for survivor voices.
Yeah, I think so too. That is very, very important. And the work that your organization is doing, I want to get into that work now to discuss it. And because you have programs on a national level, your organization is not just centered locally, but it's centered nationally. And regardless if you're just a local, everyday Verona Mitchell, or if you're a big celebrity, Oprah, somebody, anyone could tap in and should tap into your organization. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your organization and the work that you're doing in this realm.
Thank you, Verona. You know, so much of what we do is to create a platform for women of color to really be able to talk about, as advocates, what they're seeing in their communities, to really speak to the ways in which violence against women of color are impacting themselves and their communities, and what we are attempting to do is to you know, change culture, is to change the cultural messaging in a way that says that, you know, once again, that, you know, we need to create room for those voices, and not just the general sort of rape is wrong, but rape is wrong and violence is wrong and domestic violence is an issue. But here are the various ways in which it happens, and to really talk about the various communities who are impacted, to talk about the kind of data that we know when we know that 4 out of every 10 black women have been a victim of rape, physical violence, and or stalking in their lifetime. When we know that just under half, 47.6% of black women specifically have reported sexual violence other than rape. And so, you know, we know that for Native women, for example, that we found that, that 1 in 3 Native women will be raped or sexually assaulted in her lifetime. 1 in 3, Verona. When we know that multiracial women, women who identify as being across, who identify as being women who are across racial identities and ethnic identities, that 1 in 2 of these women state that they will experience rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner in their lifetimes. And 1 in 3 multiracial women say that they will experience rape or victimization in their lifetimes. And the difference here is that we're talking about 1 in 2 multiracial women, for example, who will experience rape, physical violence, and stalking. So that's 1 in 2. But 1 in 3, Verona, are saying that they're going to experience, or at least we've been able to determine, will experience rape victimization in their lifetime. And that comes from the National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey. And, you know, when we know that, that trans women are, that in 2015 alone, in the first 7 weeks, there was at least one trans woman that was murdered per week. When we know that that in 2013, more than half of the victims who experienced LGBT homicides were transgender women of color. So I am bringing these forward because I'm saying that Women of Color Network, it is, we work with state coalitions, we work with local programs, we work within, we've been to the White House many times and had wonderful conversations and built strong relationships there with the White House Council on Women and Girls. We work alongside other national organizations such as the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center, such as the Institute on Domestic Violence in African American Community, Casa de la Esperanza, that really has the National Latino Alliance. We work alongside the National Asian Pacific Islander Institute on Gender-Based Violence. We work alongside the national, CSAIS, Sisters of Color Ending Sexual Assault. I mean, all of these groups are groups that are finding our way across many different systems to bring similar messaging to say that it's not just violence, it's violence across communities. It is violence that really reinforces or replays, Verona, violence that's already happened in our communities. When we look at the African-American community, we are very clear that this violence, the sexual violence that's happening now, replicates violence that, you know, has been within our communities throughout the slavery institution, throughout Jim Crow, the civil rights movement, throughout women of color, black women working as domestic workers, going into homes, still experiencing every form of sexual violence that there is. That, you know, when we look at current domestic workers across communities, when we look at migrant workers, when we look at sexual trafficking, when we look at across all of these communities, that, you know, women's and men's and children's bodies are being utilized as collateral in war, are being used as objects, and are easily accessed and are easily harmed. The Women of Color Network creates a platform for that. And it is our job. We've got a new initiative that we've developed that's called Jagged Justice, where we call out not just domestic and sexual violence, but also talking about, you know, such things as, you know, when no indictments are rendered, in like the case of what happened with Michael Brown, and no conviction was rendered in that case of Trayvon Martin, and when stand your ground laws did not work in the case of Marissa Alexander, and when victims are blamed, like Janae Rice was blamed in the Ray Rice case, and
yes.
when you are looking at other cases such as child abuse not being fully addressed in the case of Adrian Peterson. And, you know, when you have basically black and brown bodies, male and female bodies, that are being stalked and killed, you know, through police violence, other forms of violence, we, in our case, in our work, we started this initiative where we call Jagged Justice, where we are saying that all forms of violence are impacting our communities, and that we need to connect the dots across these communities, across these experiences, and that any real justice that we get in these cases are often justice that we've had to toil and sort of scrape and pull out of the circumstance. Because generally when systems work in the way that they work, you know, very often justice does not fall in the direction that we would like it to. And often it does overlook the various experiences that we have. And often we are criminalized and dragged along the way when we're trying to get these this justice. And so, you know, for us, you know, when our hearts really go out to all of these various cases, and at the end of the day, we are really just looking for, you know, the opportunities to reinforce and to support the concept of healthy communities, healthy families, you know, we are just using our national platform. We do that in a number of different venues. And one of the best things that we do, Verona, is bring women of color together to really support their collective voices and provide them with the opportunity to network, to talk about what's happening all across the country and the various ways that they're seeing it, the various economic and criminal justice and various forms of impacts that are that they experience and that they're seeing in their communities. And we also do a lot of work with allies, Verona, because we believe that it's not just our voices as women of color or communities of color, but that we also, you know, really hold accountable, you know, those who receive privilege and on a daily basis reinforce privilege and their experiences by being a part of majority populations, by being men, by being white, by being people with financial means, people who are educated, people who are, well, educated, you know, in terms of getting that paper, people who are, you know, who are not considered too young or whose voices are not too old or whatever kinds of privileges that are out there. We both push our allies to use their resources, to use their privilege to challenge these systems, but we also create a space for people who are within those marginalized populations to come to the center to really reinforce this concept of collective liberation and collective survival, and really acknowledging that none of us really can truly survive unless we are all in that space of survival. And that that it will take all of us to have a collective approach. And so that's really the work that we do overall.
I think, you know, the only way to address this issue, and I think your organization, the Women of Color Network, have hit on it, is that it needs to be a collective effort, and it needs to be at the grassroots effort as well. But knowing that we need to have legislation, we need to go to the Hill, we need to be in lobbyists and other people in order to make it work for everyone. And I think that's the important thing. It's not just what happens. It's important what happens in our own intimate settings, in our own intimate homes, but to advocate for laws that protect people, mm-hmm. I'm going to say women of color or women in general, from violent acts, or men who cannot protect themselves from violent acts, and whether that violent act is physical harm or rape, or the likes of Bolt or some type of bullying or what, it just spans mm-hmm. and it goes on and on. And with that same thought, I can't help but I'm a social media just a fanatic, and I'm always tied either tethered to my phone or the computer, but I can't help but see a lot of fight videos, I mean physical fist fighting, hair pulling, mm-hmm. weave pulling, you get my weave out my hair, kicking till you're unconscious type of videos. Mm-hmm. But what I'm noticing is a trend that's moving from male to male combat, mm-hmm. and I'm starting to see females, just women, yeah. girls, young girls, angry for I don't know what or why, but choosing to display this form of violence, and it's being videotaped, pushed out on social media. I don't know if it's for attention or what is the statement there, but it just alarms me that I see so many videos, so many young girls, and the acceptance of physical violence is just a trend that's moving through social media at this time. Do your organization go into schools and talk to young teenage girls about their bodies and who they are in physical violence portion of that?
Well, yes, you know, we don't currently have a specific program that that does allow us to go into schools, and yet we have been asked and have presented in schools. So, in other words, we don't have a project that's directed towards it at this time, but, you know, we do have an interest in that, both in, you know, K through 12 as well as campus education. And, you know, we really do, I see exactly what you're saying, that there's all this tie to violence, and, you know, that there is this way in which, you know, our communities are capitalized upon. It's no different than many other ways in which, you know, our bodies are used for commodity. And often I think we engage in that without really fully always understanding what the implications are, and particularly young people not understanding the implications. And, you know, I just, you know, I think that, you know, until we can create a culture that really reinforces and challenges bullying, challenges fighting, challenging this direct, you know, violence that, you know, that again just, you know, does the job of oppression in and of itself. That does it. You know, that I think if we understood that more, that we wouldn't engage in that. But I also think that we have to challenge those systems that benefit from that. It's not just the individuals that are getting on video to being able to show that they can knock somebody out, or that their whole group of folks can all come together and, you know, start swinging on somebody and beating somebody to a pulp. And, you know, I've seen that across communities. I have seen it quite often in communities of color, but I've definitely seen it across, you know, I've seen mainstream, you know, I've seen, you know, white youth engage in that same thing. But it's, you know, but that sort of engagement, you know, there really is this need, you know, for greater education and to, you know, really challenge this, as you said, at the root. But it has to happen on all levels, Verona. You know, that has to happen in schools. It has to happen in the homes. It has to happen in all of our community-based institutions and spaces. It has to happen in the public policy arena. It definitely has to happen on, you know, on all platforms. You know, there has to be a unified approach. Mm-hmm. And in our case, for our communities, we really have to see the whole of this, because this impacts our communities at a great level. Those marginalized populations that folks really are getting a kick out of watching this kind of engagement, that it's important for all of us to work together on that. But there are a lot of youth out there who are speaking out about these sorts of things, that are bringing their voices forward. And, you know, one of my dreams has always been to have a leadership project for young women of color, So I would love to do that. And we did have one that was for people that were like in there, that were already sort of in the workplace, but we certainly see ourselves as, you know, really wanting to do that among youth. But there are groups like Break the Cycle, for example, that is challenging and questioning these kinds of behaviors, linking them across all forms of violence, linking, you know, bullying to sort of, you know, street harassment and street violence to, to bystander responsibility and prevention.
Yes.
And so there are lots of different arenas. And, you know, WLCN just spun off in September 2014. The world is sort of at our feet here in terms of what we can do. And so there are, I think, many opportunities for us. We have an amazing staff of 8 women of color across the country. And you know, dozens of consultants and colleagues who are, many of them are doing youth-based work and are questioning these spaces and are doing it in many different arenas, again, in various different institutions, faith institutions and so forth. And so I just think that a collective voice is happening. But I am with you, though, Verona. It is very disheartening to see that.
It is very hard, and I can't help but to think that maybe in some ways it gives the dominant society or society as a whole an image about black women, you know, or young black girls growing up in a particular neighborhood. And I'm pretty sure they have videos out there that shows other minorities or other ethnic or racial groups out there cutting up and fighting as well. I don't like to see it for any group, to be honest. But especially for African-American women who we all already have such a certain segment of society looks at us as being something that sometimes subhuman, sometimes superhuman, that we're looked at as over-sexualization. Everything, every stereotype there is thrown at us, that we looked at as being manly. Like if you see the Serena Williams, you know, she wins and everyone focuses on her body looking like a man and calling her a man or a gorilla. Whatever thing that you can throw at us, it's been thrown at us. I look at that and I think about the Sandra Bland case and the way that the whole situation escalated into this handcuffing and knee on my back and slam to the ground or what have you. And one of the words that she said, this is how you treat a woman? Is this how you treat a woman? I will never forget because she kept, is this how you treat a woman? But are we looked at as, you know, what are we looked at, you know, in the case of maybe authority figures who have the power to enforce physical violence against us? We're women. We have hearts. We have souls. We cry. We hurt. We bleed. We do everything as any other human woman would do. And it just seems like that there's this stereotype or cloud that says we are something else and we're treated as something else. Could you respond on that especially?
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. I mean, I think that as Sojourner Truth said, you know, ain't I a woman? I mean, you know, she, you know, that isn't, that's not a new concept that, you know, for black women, that our bodies and our lives, our voices, our children and, you know, everything tied to us is dehumanized, that our bodies are dehumanized and that it's not unusual within, you know, this, you know, within the United States for there to be systems that also reinforce this dehumanization. You know, what I have tried to look across many, many different, articles and so forth. And what I, you know, recognize is that, you know, this is a police officer who really believed that he needed to have complete power in that situation. He was going to, whatever he could to silence her, he was going to do it. Whether that was through threats, whether that was through, and this was simply, you know, he stopped her for the, you know, for the failure to, use her her signal. But when he stopped her, then it was that, you know, she was unwilling to get out of her car. She was unwilling to stop smoking her cigarette. I mean, she, in his mind, she was defying his power. And so we still have these systems that are engaging in power. And anything that seems to challenge or question power is going to be, our systems grant a lot of power, a lot of authority to folks to pull people back under that concept of power. That feels no different to me than the slavery institution, any other form of institution that has occurred. It's replicated. And, you know, Sandra Bland is not the only voice and not the only person who's experienced this. There have been many, many men who have been unarmed that, you know, I already named. And, you know, there are some women such as, you know, Tanisha Anderson, you know, and Miriam Carey and, you know, Rakia Boyd. And, you know, there are all of these people who were unarmed, found themselves, you know, who were shot and killed in police custody. You know, in Sandra's case, there's this question of whether or not she, you know, committed suicide or whether or not she was harmed. And, you know, I have to admit, speaking on my behalf, and I think I could probably speak on behalf of WLCN, we very much question that. And we really do want to see more investigation around that, because it is awfully interesting that, you know, it's not just her, but that there was a young lady who was also killed right in the same time frame. 18 years old, she was, you know, quote unquote, committed suicide. There was a Native man who was an activist who was just found as well around the same time, who, you know, died in police custody. I mean, there's this, it is clear that there is this long history. But going back to your real question about, you know, what are the stereotypes, I do believe that that systems are really just made up of people. Mm-hmm. And these people come into these systems with their own perspectives. Many of these perspectives and biases are both things that were given to them, that they sort of didn't ask for, that, you know, they didn't seek. That was before they were a certain age. And then after that, there's a certain point where you are responsible for seeking out information. And I believe that once you get to a point when you're recognizing all of the all of the messaging that was both bestowed upon you without your choice and bestowed upon you as, you know, once you are sort of in a concept of choice, that the fact that these individuals are still walking around carrying this privilege and carrying around these biases without challenging their biases, they are responsible for that. And so I just think that these systems really reflect that. I think these systems are created in a way as such as well to reinforce, you know, power dynamics. And so I just think that, women of color are targeted. They are targeted in a number of different ways. And, it's problematic that, you know, in the case of, you know, Serena Williams, that we continue to belittle her actions, her real accomplishments. Because people want to question her body, her body type, and diminish her. And I just think that is just, that is, those are systems that that would seek to diminish us, you know, in various ways, and individuals that would seek to do that.
Go ahead, Tanya.
Well, and I was just going to say, and while I think that there is this idea that we may reinforce those stereotypes, you know, at the end of the day, I challenge the fact that there are stereotypes in that way to begin with, that we still engage those, that there are systems that still support those and media that still reinforce those. And so, you know, it's like damned if you do and damned if you don't, regardless, whether you're seeking to or not, that somehow – you know, I mean, we work with our children, we work with our boys, walk a certain way, talk a certain way. We work with folks as you're working, walking into the workplace, walk a certain way, talk a certain way. You know, you try your best, but you know you're going to be stopped by the police. You're worried that you need to walk a certain way and talk a certain way. I mean, whether she challenged him on her cigarette or not, Sandra Bland, you know, whether or not she was going to get out of her car, you know, I would still venture to say that there are still many people who find themselves in those circumstances, whether they, quote unquote, stepped any over any line or reinforced any stereotype or not. Just by virtue of being a person of color, they find themselves endangered.
Yeah, that's true. That is
it just is what it is.
But it is what it is. That's just what I was about to say. It is what it is. It's sad that we live in such a world, but it is what it is. Tanya, as we end our hour here on Cultural Conversation, this has been a great conversation. At first I was dealing with the technical, but you know when you're dealing with something and then it's like, okay, I don't know why this thing won't work. I know something good's going to come out of it and something good has come out of it. Yes. Give our listening audience, in my chat room, I'm probably overloading the chat room. That's probably why we blanked off in the first half. But give our listening audience some lasting thoughts, some things that we as a community can do in regards to violence and accepting people for when they tell us that these violent acts have been portrayed against them. Give us some lasting thoughts on what should we do as a community.
Well, so, you know, in a lot of ways, we need to recognize that we all have a role to play, that violence in our communities, no matter where it's showing up, is our business. It is our business, whether it happens on the streets or whether it happens in, you know, in the custody of police officers, or whether it happens in our relationship, or whether it happens with a high profile person, or whether it happens in the, you know, in our bedrooms or in our homes. Violence matters. Violence is an issue, and it is all of our business when that happens, because it does cross lines. Violence is not just a crime, but it is the violence, you know, at the end of the day, is hurtful and problematic, and is a source of pain, and a source of negative legacy. And so we've got to challenge that. We all pay a price for violence against women and children, for violence against communities. You know, we are encouraging people to, you know, use their circle of influence, to, you know, to really do what you can in your local communities, with your relatives, with your children and grandchildren, with your nieces and nephews, with your partners, with your friends and your neighbors, and all of the places that you can. Use your circle of influence to challenge. And you know, it's important to really really work towards social change and not just charity work. That to really see this as real important work that. So that you don't just sort of do a one-time thing and step away from it. You know, this is going to take all of our efforts, and it's going to take ongoing efforts, and consistent efforts to really challenge the kinds of violence that we're seeing in our communities and in our families and in our homes. And so we're asking everyone to step up, that everyone needs to see themselves as a part of the solution, because if you're not really a part of the solution, then your silence and your non-activity, your non-involvement is really, truly a part of the problem. And so we're asking folks to get involved in some way. You know, we're not saying that everybody's got to do it the same way, but we are encouraging everyone to find ways to do this and to support the leadership of people that are engaging in this work. You know, it is a challenge. Sometimes, Rona, it's hard to tell people that I do work, you know, in addressing domestic and sexual violence. And if you think about October, and we look at the fact that breast cancer, you know, continues to be more looked at and more revered in that circumstance, you know, domestic and sexual violence, in particular sexual violence, continues to be a tough topic and a taboo topic, when at the end of the day, we really need to get at that very rudimentary issue, because it's impacting all of us. And we need to support those individuals that are doing this work, and then we need to find ways to support it overall. We need to make sure to bring marginal voices to the center, those communities that are least likely to receive a platform or to be heard. We need to create those spaces. We need to not just say domestic and sexual violence, but we need to talk about the communities that are impacted by domestic and sexual violence and the various ways in which that can happen. We need to encourage communities to be allies. We need to also find ways to donate and to support those communities. If folks are interested in supporting the Women of Color Network, Inc. as a new independent nonprofit, we are certainly opening our doors for that sort of support as well. There are a number of ways to either donate or to be a part of our work or to help get the word out about the work that we're doing. And I also encourage people to support, cultural conversations. I think that, that these are just various ways, Verona, that we stand in solidarity. You're creating a platform and so are we. And I really, really appreciate all that you do to help make sure that the word gets out around these issues. I encourage your audience to continue to support you. The Women of Color Network, you can find us online at www.wocninc.org. That's wocninc.org. You can call our office at 1-844-WOCN-INC. So that is 844-962-6462. Again, 844-WOCN-INC. And if anybody is finding themselves in danger right now and are needing immediate assistance, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline. And their 800 number is 1-800-799-7233 or 1-800-799-SAFE. Those are various ways that you can reach out and get support.
Well, that you've said that so well, and that's great information. And you're saying it from the heart. I want to thank you, Tonya Lovelace Davis, for really gracing our studios tonight and giving us this important information. Whenever you want to come on, whenever you have a special project, you are welcome to come on Cultural Conversations. We really need to hear it. And I don't know how I'm going to close that chat room because they're just chatting up a storm. But I think that people need to know that there are resources out here. If no one will listen to you in your home, if you can't confide in anyone, you can call the Women of Color Network and get directed. You can Google them. You can go on Facebook.
Absolutely.
I found you on Facebook. Any kind of social media, just Google it in, and there are resources out there to help. So I want to thank you for joining me and being my very, very special guest, Tonya Lovelace Davis, who's executive director. I'm going to say chief executive director and CEO and everything, just heading the Women of Color Network. You probably wear, if it's a nonprofit, I know you wear many, many hats. And so I want to acknowledge all the hats that you're doing. And thank you for representing on a national level. Thank you for bringing the charge all the way to Washington. I hope we get some positive results and keep your organization moving as well. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. You've been a blessing, and I really appreciate your listening audience and appreciate you, Verona. And I will take you up on that. We have some things coming up, so I will be in touch.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for joining me tonight on Cultural Conversations. I want to thank my listening audience really for bearing with us as we went through a little technical issues, but we got that taken care of, and we were able to have just a fantastic show tonight. I'm pumped up and I'm charged. I feel real good. Sometimes these topics can get you down and you feel like there's no resolve or no way out, and it's special guests like Tonya Lovelace Davis that comes on the show and brings a bright light and say, hey, yes, it's bad, but guess what? We have resources and we're in the struggle with you, and we know we're going to make it through to the next chapter, or we know we're going to resolve this issue. So I appreciate individuals such as her. She is a beam of light. I want to thank you for joining Cultural Conversations, and I will see you next week.
Sitting in, sitting out on the edge of paradise.
This is Verona Mitchell, and thank you for joining me on Cultural Conversations. At Cultural Conversations, we're bringing weekly cultural issues and topics to our online studio. Join me next week as we bring more of Cultural Conversations. Thank you for joining me.